Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The other thing that annoyed me was something that Paul said at the very beginning, which was, it's really hot in the tent today, so the bakers have to concentrate on what they're doing. And it's like, oh, that's a really helpful bit of advice, Paul. Yes, that's all you need to do on a hot day, just concentrate.
Well, welcome back to the Bake Down podcast. This is Josh Landy, founder of Bake With A Legend, the company that gives you the chance to bake alongside former Bake Off stars. And you can now do this from anywhere in the world with our virtual classes. If you're getting in the mood for Christmas, why not sign up for Karen Wright's Frangipan Mince Pie class or Dan Beasley Harling's Yule Log class? Those are just two of the many classes we have online. And remember to use the code PODCAST to get 10% off all bookings. We'd also love to hear from you if you're thinking about getting a group together online for some team building, family get-togethers or virtual Christmas parties. Now, Howard wasn't quite sure about calling it 1980s week, but alongside Jane and the always entertaining Dan Beasley Harling, we reflected on another enjoyable week in the tent. We're now approaching the quarterfinal stages and none of us can call the winner. We hope you enjoy the episode and we'll see you again next Wednesday. Well, hello and welcome back to the seventh episode of the 2020 series of the Bake Down podcast. Once again, we are thrilled to be joined by Dan Beasley Harling, as well as Jane and Howard, of course. And we are reflecting on what I believe was the first ever 1980s week. Dan, am I right? Was it the first ever 1980s week?
Yeah, as far as I can remember, it was the first. I mean, obviously, they've done sort of historical periods, but I think it's the only sort of recent period they've done. Although I was very upset by Peter remarking that he was born in the year 2000 and referring to the 1980s as ancient history. And I think we can safely say we've all gone off Peter immediately, haven't we? I thought that was a very cruel thing to say.
Yeah, well, it's been a couple of weeks anyway since Howard changed to his favourite to win the competition is. So have you gone off Peter sufficiently now, Howard?
I've not completely gone off Peter. I think he just needs sort of a little bit of direction about being nicer to older people.
Right? Yeah, cruel.
And the oldest one in this quartet of people, by a long way. I'm not at all offended. I'm just used to being old. I think Benjamina said that I was old school, and that was when I was on the show. So, sorry, guys. It's what happens when you get over 30.
Now, Howard, Paul referred to himself as an 80s boy at heart. Is that how would you describe yourself, Howard? Is that similar?
I think we are of similar age, yeah. So I think definitely... the 80s were a period when I'd just graduated. I was, looking for my first job, trying to make some money. I have to say, I don't look back at it with the fondness that Paul seemed to, but But yeah, I think that just depends upon personal circumstances, doesn't it?
Dan, what were you doing in the 1980s that you remember fondly?
In the 1980s, I was mainly soiling myself, I think. I was born in 82, so it was...
Nothing's changed then.
Not much. I will go back to it in the end. One of my earliest memories, actually, is of the 1988 Olympics. So I remember little slivers of the 80s, but not any great detail, I'm afraid. My father inculcated me in all the lovely music of the 80s, but no, in terms of real 80s experience, I'm afraid it's a little bit before my time.
Dan, would you have been baking in the 80s in those first 8 years of Dan? Were you baking so young?
Ooh, do you know what? I probably would have helped my mother make flapjacks and jam tarts and things, but I don't know. I think I got interested in baking when I was about 12 or 13, so no, that would have been in the mid-90s. That would have been Nirvana baking or something, I don't know.
Well, Jane, I don't know about you. I just got the feeling in this week's episode that it might have been just a little bit warm in the tin. It wasn't really mentioned, but it felt it was implied almost at times. What did you must have had a couple of hot days as well, because it is usually filmed over a period in the year where you can get days like that.
Yes, I'm not sure when they filmed it this year, but yes, it looks as though they had an absolute scorcher. I must say we didn't ever have anything as hot as that. I think at one point it was 28 degrees and then I was trying to keep track and then they said it was 35 degrees in the afternoon for the technical. I mean, that must have been beastly. And of course, it was a weekend when they're making ice cream. We had it when we were doing mini mousse cakes, so we were having to get gelatin to set the mousse, and of course that wasn't setting either, so there was a lot of slop going on. And we also had quite a hot day when we were doing a mousse bouche, and I had some little cones of phyllo pastry that were filled with delicious cherry and cream with the cherry on the top, and you could see the cream just melting and the cherries falling off. So I think it happens, you know, you have a week where you need tend to be warm, so bread, and it's cold and you have an ice cream week. And we've had it before. What was that, your series? That wasn't your series, was it, Howard? It was Nancy's series.
Yeah.
With Ice Cream Gate, when Ian chucked it in the bin because nothing was setting. So it just happens. If it's ice cream week, it's going to be hot in the tent. And I think it was the hottest it's ever been. Poor things. I really felt for them.
Yeah, I do think, though, like Paul sort of said, you know, well, of course, we didn't know it was going to be hot when we were doing this ice cream challenge. And you could see him desperately trying to stifle a smile. They know this is going to happen. They know it's going to be hot. Of course they know. And yeah, the melting disasters do make brilliant television, but it does seem all a little bit cruel, doesn't it? I don't know.
Now, before we get into this week's episode, Howard, we have had an email in. This is from Elizabeth and Alex in Maryland in the United States. They said, "Hi, everyone. Just want to share with my husband and I are huge fans of your show. We watched the episode on Saturday and discussed the podcast later in the week after our commuting. Listening time has become a tradition in our household. My husband even signed us up for a Bake with a Legend class as a birthday surprise. Now, we were discussing the show and pondering this question. Who writes the briefs? Do the judges write them?" So, Howard, can you shed any light? Who comes up with these briefs?
Oh, that's really interesting, because I suppose the idea is that the judges come up with an idea, possibly. Certainly, I think in terms of the technical challenges, they are closer to the judges in terms of the direction and the actual recipe and so on. But I think generally, somebody in the production team who would be working on the brief. So I think the judges will be consulted, but I think it's probably one of the food producers that comes up with ideas. They possibly even do it as a sort of group discussion as well.
Well, let's get looking at what was in 1980s week. And the first task, Jane, was to make 8 individual quiches, looking for 2 savoury flavours. Now, this is a classic. We're going to get this every year in Bake Off. You have to make a good short crust pastry. What did you make of the challenge this week?
I thought it was a nice challenge. It really irritated me a fraction, and I'm a great Prue fan. But she said, in the 80s, it was called Quiche Lorraine, which it was. So we used to do it with slices of tomatoes decorating the top. I mean, it looked very 80s. But she said, you know, which was onion, bacon and cheese. But we don't want that. We want something more modern. I don't think onion, bacon and cheese is, you know, you shouldn't consign that to the heap of historic recipes you're not going to make again. I think it's an absolutely delicious combination. And actually, whose was it? Somebody did a very similar one of those, and she said it was absolutely delicious. So I just wish they'd get their stories right, to be honest.
Now, Dan, I mentioned there about it being hot in the tin. So just tell us, what is it that makes shortcrust pastry particularly difficult when it's hot? What have you got to try and be aware of?
Well, with most pastries, you need it to be cold, apart from choux and hot water crust. But mainly, you want pastry to be cold so that the fat doesn't melt. And in fact, I have warm hands and I need to run my hands under cold water when I'm handling pastry, because otherwise my hands will just melt the fat instantly. So yeah, it is tricky. You have to work very quickly. I think the secret is to work quickly and efficiently so the fat doesn't all melt out of the pastry. That just comes down to experience. So I think, you know, those most experienced with pastry are going to be able to do it quickly and get it tucked away faster and hopefully got time to chill it down. I was horrified that Hermine didn't blind break her pastry, but I'm thrilled for her that it did work out, because I did not expect that to.
Well, while we're talking about Hermine, Howard, what did you make of that moment where Laura came over to assist her? And I wasn't quite sure what the advice was. Did she go to a different setting on the oven? Dan, I'll just come to you because you look quite sure on that one before we go to Howard.
No, I just have something to say about that, which is, so the ovens have, it's a bit of a weird oven. And so on the regular oven setting, it only goes up to 200 fan, which isn't very high. And then there's a separate bread setting where it can go up to like 290, I think it is, really, really hot. And I just thought that was really, really lovely because obviously it's far more memorable to me than to anyone else. But in the week I went home, I sort of had a pie in the oven and it desperately needed to cook. And if I'd have remembered that there was a bread setting where I could have made the oven hotter, there was a chance it might have been cooked. So I thought for Laura to come over and say to someone, hey, I know how to make your oven hotter for you. But I thought that was just such a lovely thing to do. And we know that, you know, Laura's sort of struggled in the past. So for her to so early sort of give someone else a leg up, I thought was beautiful. That was speaks to her character, certainly.
Yeah, it was a nice moment. Howard, what did you make of it then? So that was, you know, Laura coming over to give Hermione the advice. And it almost seemed like to surprise Hermione that she got really good feedback in the end, because she seemed the whole way through like it was going to head for a disaster, and it went so well in the end.
It did go well. And I think although Prue pointed out that there was just a little bit of softness in the middle underneath on the quiches, I think the way that she'd approached it, the fact that she'd gone for pretty classic flavours and executed it really well, I think it was a surprise, but also in many respects, it's what we've come to expect from Hermine, isn't it?
There was a moment, Jane, where Hermine said that she likes cooking more than baking, and I thought that was quite interesting. I mean, there were so many like flavors are getting put into all these bakes they're making, but you know, I wondered if maybe she just didn't get onto MasterChef at one point the way she said it.
She'd probably be very good at MasterChef, wouldn't she? Her flavours are always lovely. I don't know. It irritates me slightly that there is such a huge distinction made out to be between baking and cooking. If I'm in the kitchen and I'm baking something, I feel as though I'm cooking. You know, I do think baking's a bit more science-y because you've got to get the proportions right and you can't taste things very often before it's baked. You don't know what it's like, all that sort of stuff. But I don't know about you guys, but I think baking is cooking. Cooking isn't baking. It goes one way, I think. So
just going back to her mean, which her tart sounded absolutely delicious, but I wasn't 100% sure. Didn't she blind bake? I've got written here 55 minutes remain and not blind baked. In that bit that you didn't see, do you think she might have blind baked it? Because I always find quiches, if you don't blind bake them, you can't cook them for long enough to get the bottom of the pastry cooked, because the custard that you put in just keeps that pastry soggy. You've got to bake it for really quite a long time to get it cooked. And I wasn't sure whether she'd slipped it in and we hadn't seen that she'd blind baked it. I don't know. It's sometimes hard, isn't it, with the filming and the editing to see exactly what goes on.
Howard, there was another moment I wanted to pick up on where we'd seen last week Paul Hollywood demand that burgers had relish taken off them to be more to his taste. Now, we had Prue, I don't know what she's got against baked beans or what they've ever done to her, but she seemed to be aggressively against them. But it was nice to see that she didn't go up to Lottie and demand that they're removed or that there was a quiche made without them for her.
Absolutely. And I thought that was a really strong contrast of the approaches of the two judges, because she said, we're going to taste it as if we have no prejudices at all, which I think is exactly what the judges should do. And it just made me a little bit more angry about Paul's approach last week. I have to say, I'm in the same camp as Prue. I don't like baked beans. Sorry. I don't want to go into what they've done to me in the past either.
I can only imagine. Dan, you weren't with us for the podcast last week. What did you make of the Paul demanding that, you know, no relish on the burger?
Oh, I didn't think that was cute. I have obviously two small children who are like, oh, I don't like that. I don't want to eat that. So I have to deal with this all the time. And my attitude is, I've made what I've made for dinner. If you don't like it, you don't have to eat it. I'm not making two meals. I'm not doing it again. If there's bits you don't like, you can pick them out. Like I kind of, you know, dear Paul, who I actually think is lovely, but he is, you know, he's a fully grown adult man. And if he doesn't want to eat the pickles, he can just pick them out. I wasn't particularly impressed by that. But also, as I often say to my kids, you know, like, I don't particularly like green beans, but like, I eat them anyway because they're good for me. Do you know what I mean? Like, you know, because they're part of the dish. You don't sit there moaning about the beans and you know, I don't know. I hate people who complain about food. And it's my mother always taught me, it's a very, very bad manners to complain about food. And if you don't like it, you just leave it on your plate. You don't need to tell everyone about it. And that's sort of how I was raised. So yeah, it does get the hackles on the back of my neck up a bit when people moan about not liking food.
There you go. That could have rivaled Howard's hump. Now, Jane, did anyone's in particular leap out to you? I mean, Mark has been at pains to tell us what part of the country he's come from, and so again with his Cornish-inspired quiche.
Yes, and I'm sorry to say, when I heard what the flavour combinations were, it made me go, bleh. I would never think, really, to put cheese and fish together. So he had cod and Cornish blue. Love cod, love Cornish blue. Not sure that I put them together. Or smoked haddock and cheddar. They're just not combinations that set me alight. So I really appreciate him trying to use his local ingredients, but that didn't do it for me, to be honest. I'm not going to tell you about the ones I don't like. I didn't like the one Dave's. I didn't like either of Dave's. Beef and cooked avocado. I can't bear cooked avocado. I would have eaten it if I'd been the judge. Or the scrambled egg, the double egg. Didn't like that idea. Probably liked means the most, the classic combinations. I love Gruyere. Mushroom and spinach are fantastic. It's interesting. I quite like Peter's as well. I wasn't mad about Lottie's. I love baked beans, but I probably wouldn't have put them in a quiche. And Laura sounded nice. I thought Laura sounded nice, actually. So, yeah, a couple I liked, but probably the most classics. And the ones I wasn't mad about were the ones with the sort of trying to be interesting for the sake of it, I felt.
Yeah, I wasn't thrilled with the fish and cheese and fish and cheese. It just seemed like it's incredibly uninspired.
I don't know. I'm just surprised that he was okay with serving up essentially two variations of the same quiche. It just seemed a little odd, didn't it? But yeah, I like the sound of Lottie's just because I love black pudding. So I like the sound of Lottie's. And Laura's sounded like something that I would do with the feta pea and asparagus and then just like a nice spicy meaty one. So I like the sound of those. But I wasn't blown away by anybody in the signature. There was nothing, I don't know, maybe I'm being unfair, but there was nothing sort of truly mind-blowing in there. But some good pastry, which is, I guess, the point of it. So, yeah, mildly successful, maybe not inspiring.
Just finally on the signature challenge here, Howard. I mean, Dave, there was a lot of eggs going on. I couldn't quite work out. Was it sort of scrambled egg with it as well that he was trying to reach? I think Paul looked a little bit uncertain about it when he came over, didn't he?
I don't know. I think he must have had a strange dream or something, Dave. I can't imagine why you would even come up with the idea of putting scrambled egg inside an egg custard. It's like, and he seemed to feel that he'd come up with something quite revolutionary in doing so. But I think everybody was thinking, well, it's just going to be like little bits of egg inside egg. Yeah, bizarre.
What I would have done, if you'd wanted to do a full English, is perhaps in each of the little tarts put a quail egg, and then that would have cooked as the tart cooks, so you could have seen the bits rather than have the scrambles. I'm with Howard. I think he must have had a bad dream or something.
I think it's probably one of those situations where, like you say, Howard, you think you've come up with something brilliant, but actually you're just going to make it look like you ruined your custard by accident. It's just like, I don't know. I don't quite know what he was thinking. We've all made scrambled egg in a quiche before, but not on purpose. Like, you know.
I'm Sam Clements, host of the 90 Minutes or Less Film Festival, another podcast in the Stripped Media family, a podcast that celebrates movies under 90 minutes long. Each episode, I'm joined by a special guest who selects a movie to join our prestigious lineup. Past guests have come from the worlds of film, television, music, food, comedy, and podcasting. Search for us now on the app you're currently listening to this podcast, or join us at 90minfilmfest.com.
Let's move on to the technical challenge. And Jane, this was a fun one. You've been teaching donut classes online for Bait with a Legend. This was a challenge, 6 custard and jam finger donuts to make a golden colour. And they had 2 hours and 45 minutes here. What did you make of this challenge?
Well, we do it in about an hour and 45, don't we, when in the class, which is a bit of a rush. But we do manage to get them all done. Yeah, no, great challenge. Very, very 80s. They look great. I thought I might start making some finger donuts. I don't like creme mousseline very much. I love creme pat. And whisking butter into it just makes it all a wee bit greasy and oily for me. I'm not a great mousseline fan. However, I mean, I thought they looked lovely. I must admit, when I saw Dave cranking his fryer up to 180, it worried me because We fry them at 160 and I think do about a minute and a bit each side, and that cooks them perfectly. I think you need it that bit lower and slower in order to get the dough cooked in the middle, but not too brown on the outside, which is really what happened to him. But yeah, lovely challenge. I thought they all looked very nice. Well, with the exception of Dave's, they all looked very nice at the end. Yeah, I mean, I think they were on brief for 80s week, weren't they? But they used to do them. You could buy them in the high street and they had that really artificial whipped cream, which actually I absolutely love. Which just goes to show that I have no taste, probably.
I just have to say, Jane, I really like creme mousseline, so I don't know. Maybe you make it badly, Jane. I don't know.
Maybe I do.
No, I love creme mousseline just because it's not so sweet. And if you're pairing it with something that is already very sweet, then I think it is a good combination. But your donut's not actually that sweet. So, yeah, maybe it could have benefited from a little bit more sugar. And also maybe I should pay more attention to my waistline, Jane. But, yeah, no, I love a creme mousseline. I did. Poor old Dave. His were full burnt though, weren't they? I mean, they were burnt. Like it was like I did. Oh dear, poor old Dave. But yeah, no, I thought it was a great challenge. But you know, again, if you've never made a donut, I mean, hopefully you have made a donut if you get onto Bake Off. But it's very, very easy to accidentally set the temperature too high. And I'm actually quite impressed that only one of them sort of burnt theirs to a crisp. So I think it did its job. Yeah, but creme mousseline is delicious, Jane. I'll come to my macaron class, Jane, and I'll teach you how to make a lovely creme mousseline, all right?
Yeah, okay, Dan. I'll come to your class and you can teach me how to cook. Jeez, we have a go at old people this week, isn't it? I like whipping mascarpone into my creme pat. That makes a really nice, instead of being quiet, so all right. Okay, I'll give it another go, Dan. Right.
Now, Howard, I was wondering what you made of Peter saying he's never fried anything before, because, you know, Dave presumably had, and he ended up with burnt donuts. Now, Peter said he never even fried anything before. He didn't have time in the 20 years he's been on Earth to fry anything.
I thought that was surprising, actually. I think Jane and I have spoken on previous occasions about the fact that there are certain things that you would try and have a go at before you go on Bake Off. I must admit, I've never used one of those fryers, and I've never actually used an ice cream maker. But I've certainly put fat into a big pan and deep fried that way, and I've made ice cream churning it by hand. So yeah, I'm a bit sort of low tech in my approach, but I think it's worth having a go at these things before you go into the Bake Off tank.
Yeah, he did refer to it as quite a rush to deep fry something, which makes you imagine what he would be like if he was presented with the opportunity to go for a skydive or something similar. Jane, what did you make of him not having time to practice his deep frying before going in the tent?
I'm just very surprised. I think that he hadn't deep fried anything, but you know, kids are a lot more health conscious these days. he does come from Scotland, so clearly no deep fried Mars bars up there. Perhaps he is the other end of the scale. No, but he did a nice job for all that, didn't he? I think it just goes to show how what a good baking brain he's got. And I say it every week. I mean, he is Howard in disguise. You know, he thinks his bakes. He seems to have a huge amount of experience, which obviously he can't have because he's only 20. But, he astounds me every week. And if he has never deep fried anything, then good for him. I like a bit of deep frying me. And a donut is absolutely delicious. I can't be doing all those baked donuts. Mind you, we made churros on our series, and practicing those, they exploded in my kitchen several times. I can't bear churros, but donuts, yeah, delicious.
Dan, I wanted to ask you about something we saw that was a little bit unusual, was that they must have all been given fans on the end of their bench, and they were using those fans at different points in this episode to cool down what was in front of them. Is that an effective baking tip that you can share with people?
I mean, here comes the science. But like the fan obviously cools you down because it encourages evaporation. I'm not sure how much that helps with a bake, really. I mean, it can help form a skin on like macaron or something. But I think they were mainly, because they had the big wet cloths, didn't they? And then they had the fan sort of cooling them down, which left very attractive patterns on some of the contestants. And I think Laura had a fan stuffed down her top at one point. It was certainly quite amusing, but unfortunately in that tent, nothing is going to keep you cool. I was there on some incredibly hot days, and not only is the ambient temperature incredibly hot, you obviously have a whole rigging of studio lights above you, the ovens are all on, and leaning over a deep fat fryer, they're all going to be absolutely roasting. And I just dread to think what they would have smelled like when they had to rewash those clothes the next day.
Well, I was going to ask about this one, because this week, more than ever, it looked like the clothes needed a wash. Surely they were sent to a laundrette or similar, or maybe they must have had an in-house laundrette in the bubble. Howard, what do you think? They can't have been expected to put on those sweaty clothes for a second day, surely?
You would hope not, but I'm not entirely sure. I know in our year, if you got anything on your clothes, it was just a case of trying to sponge it down as best as possible. But this was probably ingrained sweat, wasn't it? Which is not going to be spongeable, really.
I have to say, if anyone for a second thought I was even a little bit charming, this is going to ruin it forever. But yeah, no, at the end of the first day, I would often have like horrible sweat stains on my clothes, and I would literally have to rinse them out in the hotel sink and leave them up to dry to get rid of the sweat rings. Like it was revolting. And you would kind of think that they would be offered a laundry service, but that was not offered. I did even ask at the hotel front desk if they had an overnight laundry service. I was prepared to pay, but they did not have one. So I would imagine they were all wearing exactly the same clothes.
It was quite cold when we started filming, so you could rinse things out and put them on the radiator because the radiators were on. Frankly, by the time I got halfway through, I didn't care whether I smelt the next day, and I really couldn't be bothered to wash out overnight. And I wasn't going to be buying doubles of absolutely everything. I would hope that they could have, on a day so hot, I've washed it for them, but I bet they didn't. I bet that was pretty rank in the tent by the time they got to the showstopper.
Now, Dan, overall here, they did pretty well on these. I thought, well, certainly her minds were great. Peter's good. Mark got good feedback. And then it seemed we had a divide there. And we knew at that point, one of Laura, Lottie or Dave was probably going to be leaving, I thought.
Yeah. As so much is often the way with Bake Off, it comes down to the showstopper. And it becomes a test of who can hold their nerve, who can deal best with the pressure. And I've seen other people crack, and I've cracked myself. And it's sort of, I think more than anything else, that's going to be the test for them in the showstopper, is who can handle the pressure and who falls to pieces. But yeah, we'd sort of been set up that it was going to be one of those three. And I was nervous. I mean, to be honest, I was nervous for all of them, because any of them could have gone today.
Let's just get on to talking about the showstopper. To reimagine an ice cream cake needing one baked element, they could have whatever flavours and styles they wanted. And 4 hours, 30 minutes were given to do this. I thought of you straight away, because one of the first things, Howard, we heard was Laura saying that a bucket full of wine is better than a bucket full of ice cream. Are you of similar sentiments on that one?
I love that. I love the fact that my reputation precedes me. Yes, I think I would be on that. I mean, I'm a bit more of a red wine person, so it's not usually chilled, but I think I totally understand where Laura's coming from on a hot day like that. A nice, cool white wine would be delicious.
Yeah, I can understand what she was saying. Now, Jane, it was a sad moment when she realised she had not pressed the button on her ice cream maker. Now, is this fair? Should someone have pointed this out? Is this really about her baking ability or her ability as a cook? How do you feel about this situation, Jane?
No, you can't have somebody coming around and telling her that her ice cream maker isn't chilling, because then they'd come round and tell you, as in our series happened, Andrew hadn't turned his oven on, or you know, they try to stay as completely neutral as they possibly can, and if somebody had said something to Laura, then maybe they would have spotted something on somebody else's bench and had to have pointed it out to them. So I we're all grown up people, we've been, you know, they would have all been told how to use their ice cream maker. And when I'm making ice cream, I've got one of those little ones that hasn't got the chiller unit in it. So you have to chill down your container 24 hours, 48 hours before you use it. But I always check to see whether my ice cream's going cold. Now, I know they're in the tent, and I know you don't always check things and the pressure really gets to you. But no, she's a grown-up girl, and it was up to her to make sure her ice cream maker was on.
And Dan, the fact that she didn't notice for 40 minutes... I mean, that seemed a long time, because you don't have to be an expert to kind of sense what you had in there 40 minutes ago after 10 minutes, 15 minutes. If it doesn't look right or on the way, shouldn't you notice?
Yes and no. So I have an ice cream maker in that style, sort of a one that you don't have to pre-chill. It has a refrigeration within itself, and it takes about 40 minutes to make an ice cream. So that's why she noticed after 40 minutes, because she was like, it should be done by now. Yeah, it's one of those things, because you literally set it and forget it. You don't have to think about it. So it's obviously that's what happened. She suddenly didn't notice. I might have checked it. There are signs you can see where the ice is forming on the outside. So maybe if she'd been paying closer attention, she would have noticed. But I think it's sort of fair enough that it took her a while to notice. But yeah, you did sort of think, wow, you've scuppered this for yourself, and on something so basic as just not switching on a button. So my heart sank through my stomach worrying about poor Laura.
Yeah, because everyone has to leave the bake-off process at some point, apart from one person who goes in. So but you would hate to feel that you'd left because you forgot to turn on a button. So in the end, I was slightly relieved that she doesn't have to have that on her shoulders, that she left the process possibly for not putting a button on. Howard, of all the showstoppers here, which ones took your eye? Which ones did you think were fairly impressive here?
I loved the idea of Lottie's, and I thought it was a great shame that she didn't manage to pull it off. I thought the cassette tape was a lovely idea. I actually thought when it was cut into, I thought the layering in it was quite impressive. And although Prue said that the chocolate ice cream was delicious, Paul sort of contradicted her and said he wasn't getting anything at all from it. So I'm thinking, well, I don't know where your taste buds are then if Prue says it's delicious, but you can't taste anything. But anyway, I'm slightly bitter about that, aren't I? What else did I like? I liked Peter's ice cream Christmas cake. I think it's quite a traditional thing to do, an ice cream that has a Christmas cake or Christmas pudding flavour. I think the idea of putting a fruit cake in there as well, which is what it looked like the bottom layer was probably a step too far. I would have probably gone for something like an almond sponge or something to just give that kind of marzipan flavour, but without going for too much heaviness.
And he had some alcohol, Howard, in his. Was it brandy? And that's possibly harder to make work in something like this?
Yeah, and I think anybody who would put additional things in, like Mark with his honey, it is going to make it slightly more difficult. So I think it's getting that balance right between trying to do something which has great flavour and which is a bit different from what other bakers are doing, but at the same time, something which is going to be achievable and is going to end up with a result that you're happy with.
Yeah, I think Peter didn't really. There's two people who really didn't seem to properly think through how this was all going to work out. And one of them was Lottie and the other one was Peter, because I think Peter used alcohol in his ice cream, which lowers the freezing point, which is great for if you don't want to churn your ice cream. But if you've got a churner in front of you, I'd have just used a flavouring. I probably wouldn't have used real alcohol. And then he had sort of the solid lumps of fruit in it. I don't think the textures worked. But luckily, Peter wasn't really in any danger. But yeah, Lottie, I don't know what she was thinking. I'm trying to put ice cream on the outside of a cake. That was just such an error. You could tell from the start that wasn't going to work. The person who I liked the most was Mark, who I'm so thrilled. Well, I'm not thrilled. We don't have to say Mark with a C and Mark with a K anymore. We'll get onto that in a minute. But he did a Joconde and enclosed the ice cream within it. And I thought that was perfect. That's exactly what I'd have done. Sort of built up like an entremet. That had the most chance of success. It would have had the cleanest outside. Really smart. I thought Mark's was brilliant, and I can't remember what it tasted like or what the textures were, but visually I thought that was, and technically it seemed like the best choice that anyone made.
And Jane, if we come to you, firstly, what did you make of Lottie's in terms of the idea? And do you agree with Dan there that it was possibly never going to work? And I'd be interested to hear your thoughts on Dave, because he ended up, piping the ice cream, a slightly different approach.
Lottie's, I think I wasn't so mad about the idea as Howard. I could see how you get this idea in your head and you think it's a fantastic idea. And I don't know how much time they had to practice that, but it was never, ever going to work as far as I was concerned. I mean, what she could have possibly done was make a cassette mould and line that with chocolate and then poured her ice cream into it. But carving the outside of an ice cream, I think in what is inevitably going to be a hot day, they know when they get their schedules that they're going to be filming that in June, July. and generally we have some decent weather in June and July. But yeah, I wasn't mad about the idea, and certainly poor Lottie, we're not going to see her anymore, just didn't pull it off. I think it was too risky. You need to temper your ideas to what's feasible in the tent. I think. And Dave, I like the idea of piping ice cream, but I've never tried to pipe it, because if it's frozen, what might have worked would have been when it came out of the churner, it's still quite soft. If he had already assembled the cake and then he piped it out of the churner onto the top and then frozen it hard, that might have worked. I was quite... it did look a bit of a mess on the top, but, you know, credit to him for trying. I was quite intrigued by the way they did this. Everybody did it. I was trying to think how I would have made these ice cream cakes. I certainly would have gone the Mark route with a sponge around the outside to hold it all together. But, you know, why didn't they pour their ice cream out of the churner straight into their mould, put another layer of sponge or whatever on top, and then layered it up before it had all gone really hard, instead of freezing it in a tin, lifting that out and assembling it? Because there were quite a lot of gaps, weren't there? You could see that things had just been wrapped around or put on top. And I think it would have taken a lot of the stress out if they'd frozen it like that and not had to handle it too much once they'd got frozen slabs that they then put back in again. I don't know about how you guys think, but I just think I might have approached it a little differently. And I might have stuck in one of my elements as not being a custard-based ice cream, being one of those... ones that I make quite a lot with condensed milk, and I whisk mine up with yogurt and double cream, and that way you don't have to churn it. So that would have saved a process of cooling down your custard before you put it in. I think I might have thought my way through this one. I think it was as much strategy as it was baking and assembly.
I just question whether there was enough time to freeze it if they did it in one lump. I'm just saying that because I'm thinking back to the final of season... the one where Sophie won, the final of that season, they had to make an entremet, and I know they were freezing it sort of in layers as they went because there wasn't enough time to make everything first and then freeze it. So I'm thinking maybe there wasn't enough, and you're absolutely right, Jane, that would have looked much neater and been easier, but I don't question whether they had enough time to freeze it if they'd have done that.
Yeah, maybe you're right. It possibly is that, but they could have possibly got everything made in a couple of hours, and then they'd have needed 2 hours in the freezer. Those freezers would have been struggling in that heat as well, so to point that out. I just will say something about Laura. At one point, oh, bless her, I mean, I felt so sorry for her, even though, you know, it was her own thing, that fault that she didn't put it on. But at one point she shoved it in and I think said something like hope and pray, and she walked away from the freezer and left the freezer door open. And I was looking at it going, shut the door.
When they got told you've got 1 minute left, I think Lottie turned to the camera and said, to what, redo the whole cake? And at that point, did you think she was going? I must admit, I thought possibly Laura was going to go this week. It was one of the few episodes where you really couldn't tell towards the end. Do you think the right decision was made?
I think the right decision was made, but I think there were lots of things at work within this particular challenge and within the episode as a whole. So obviously you've got the heat of being in the tent, and I think I said a couple of weeks ago that I wondered whether this sort of bubble situation would over time cause a little bit of stress, and I just got the feeling that we were seeing some quite stressed people, and I think sadly Laura was one of them. And I don't like to see people getting quite so upset by things, but I think she was believing that what she'd produced wasn't up to scratch. And it's not until you look at that in comparison with others, and sadly in this case against Lottie, that you sort of think, I think you've just done enough to survive, really.
Well, Dan, there was this moment, wasn't there, where almost, I think Lottie said something akin to Laura of, well, does looking at mine make you feel better? And I can't read in Laura's mind, but I couldn't help but think maybe she was like, well, maybe a little bit.
I don't think so. Listen, right, the thing is, obviously, like, you don't want to go home. No one wants to go home. But for me, the biggest thing was I just didn't want to look incompetent. I didn't want to look like I didn't know what I was doing. And I think everyone going into the show knows that there may come a point where your best isn't good enough. There may come a time where no matter how hard you try, you're not good enough to continue in the competition. But you don't want to go home because you just completely messed up and look like, and you know, you don't want to look foolish. And I think Laura was telling the absolute truth there. I think she was just being honest. She's been like, no, it doesn't make, I mean, yeah, maybe you'll go home, but I still don't feel good about what I've done here. I think Laura is sincere. I think we have to give her the benefit of the doubt with that one. And I certainly do.
Well, she was my tip from the beginning, so I'm giving her every benefit of the doubt that you possibly could. Now, Jane, just on Laura, she got a little bit of criticism from Paul Hollywood for putting the brownie in this because he said you'd lose all that fudgy element. Was that a wrong decision for her to go with a brownie in a cake like this, do you think?
Probably, I think. But I also think Paul was being ultra critical. But yes, probably. Brownies, as we know from whatever week it was, have to be soft and squidgy in the middle, and they're going to just be hard little lumps of chocolate cake if you stick it in the freezer. But I think overall her ice creams, they said, sounded nice. Praline ice cream, absolutely delicious. Praline and chocolate, perfect combination. And you know that the judges do forgive a bit of melting on a hot day. Oh God, I just felt so sorry for all of them. Going back to saying, you know, was it the right decision between Laura and Lottie? As I was going through, you know, I think Laura just edged it in the signature. She was just ahead of Lottie in the technical. And I think she was just ahead of Lottie in this challenge as well. If Lottie had made it look lovely, I think she might have pulled it off. But poor old Lottie. It really wasn't her week, was it? But we haven't mentioned Ermine. I mean, hers looked stunning. I think sometimes because she doesn't get stressed and it's not a car crash, we don't mention her enough. But didn't it look beautiful and lovely flavours? And she really did pull it off. I mean, I think we just have to mention her in all these sort of slight car crashes that went on in these ice cream cakes. That the one person in the tent that managed to do it and do it really well was Hermine. How delicious and beautiful was that? And she used a spray booth. Has anybody ever used a spray booth before? I don't remember that.
I'm impressed she got away with that. When I was on Bake Off, I wanted to use a dehumidifier and they said, oh no, you can't use that because it looks too commercial. It doesn't look like a home baking-y thing, so please don't use it. So I'm kind of surprised they let her use it. It seemed to be like a proper pneumatic spray gun and a shield. And I'm like, wow, that looks very professional, Hermine. But it was nice that somebody did get a very professional result. And I think you're absolutely right, Jane, that because she hasn't, I mean, her signature was a little dramatic, but generally she's sort of flown under the radar quite a lot because she's not panicking and having disasters, is she? So I think, yeah, everyone's talking about Lottie because obviously we're all devastated. But yeah, we should probably take a minute to celebrate Hermine because she did do a fantastic job. And she was, we've been waiting for her to be Star Baker for a long time. And thank God she finally won it because it's a bit overdue as far as I'm concerned.
I mean, that is remarkable to have sort of seven bakers be seven Star Bakers in the 7 weeks we've had.
It is remarkable. I don't think it's ever happened before. I might be wrong. We'd need to check on that. But I think what it also shows is that somebody who's been Star Baker in the past, like Lottie, for example, can then go. And I think that means that we've got a very evenly matched group now. So just as anybody could be Star Baker again, anybody could go. And that's quite a nail-biting situation.
Yeah, I mean, Dan, have you changed at all on your thoughts about who's going to win? I know you're quite keen on Peter, you thought earlier on.
I think Peter just has the quiet air of a winner. And I think what's really funny about Peter is, like, so there's a couple of them. Like, Peter and Dave are both, like, laser-focused on winning this. You can tell. But Dave, you can kind of tell he's really competitive. But with Peter, he sort of gets away with it because he's got a big smile on his face and he's sort of, you know, he seems quite chill, even though you know he's desperate to win. So Peter is somehow being really competitive, but also really charming about it in the same breath. So, yeah, I'm enjoying Peter. I'm still pinning my hopes on Peter. I accept that my two finalist picks, which were Lottie and Mark, have now slightly derailed. But we'll get onto that in a minute. But yeah, no, Laura's actually been really impressing me. I think she's got a real fight to her. She's been in danger in the Showstopper several times. And you can see, like, she's not a quitter. She's someone who's going to fight to the bitter end and give her best. And I think that is one of the hallmarks of a finalist. So I think we Laura's impressing me, and I'm feeling like we might see her in the final now.
Now, Howard, we are 7 weeks in. I know it might be difficult for you to continue to come up with humps, although you kind of managed to get three for the price of one last week. So I hope you've got something for us today.
I have. A couple, actually. First of all, I have to say, I didn't like the theme of this week. I thought the 1980s was stretching it a little bit. I think the ice cream cake, yes, Viennetta was a 1980s invention, but Arctic Roll's been around since the 1950s, so it could easily have been party classics, cream week, dairy week again. I didn't really get the kind of 1980s. I thought they were stretching it a little bit to do that. But the other thing that annoyed me was something that Paul said at the very beginning, which was, it's really hot in the tent today, so the bakers have to concentrate on what they're doing. And it's like, oh, that's a really helpful bit of advice, Paul. Yes, that's all you need to do on a hot day, just concentrate.
Before we go, I just want to offer commiserations, Dan, because I know how enamoured you were with the hair of Mark with a K. Were you behind your sofa in tears when he departed last week?
I can't talk about it, Josh. I can't talk about it. And I'm really devastated, Howard, that you've called me out like this, saying that I want to touch his hair. Because now when I meet him and do try and touch his hair, you're going to make me look really creepy. No, I am devastated. And actually, my obsession with Mark, I feel, is justified, because as someone pointed out, he looks quite like my husband. So really, I think it's a tribute to my husband, my obsession with Mark. But yeah, no, I am devastated to see Mark go last week. And I'm really devastated to see Lottie go this week. You know, they're sort of like, they're my two kind of, you know, just from a personality perspective, they were sort of like my favorites I'd love to go for a drink with. And I'm devastated to see them gone. But then on the flip side, one of the things that I feel like such a hypocrite, because one of the things I always say is, you know, it's a baking competition and people should be judged for their baking. Like, that should be the way you judge them. And yet here I am being devastated because my sort of personal favorites are gone. So I'm gutted, but I'm also, in the same breath, like, thrilled that, like, people are being judged on baking. And, you know, there were all sorts of people who say things like, oh, you know, Paul fancies Lottie, so therefore she'll be around to the final. And I think this sort of proves that, no, it does come down to the baking. And I am very sad, and I wish that Lottie and Mark were still there, but they have been judged to be wanting on their baking on those weeks. And it seems I have to concede that it's a fair decision, very sadly.
Thank you to all three of you for being on the podcast with us this week. Only three more episodes to go. We're at the quarterfinal stage. For all of those of you that have been listening and leaving reviews to the podcast, thank you so much. And we know many of you have joined us at online classes. We have classes every weekend. We hope you'll continue to join us, and they will be carrying on into the new year as well, if you're thinking about Christmas presents. So do go to bakethelegend.com/onlineclasses. Well, that's it for this week. We will be back next Wednesday to reflect on the quarterfinal. We'll see you then.
You just heard a Stripped Media production.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.